Chapter 10. Great appetite, which, as he could afford to gratify it, was a luxury and no inconvenience, and a power of going to sleep, which, as he had no occasion to keep awake, was a most enviable faculty. You will readily suppose that John Podgers was a happy man. But appearances are often deceptive, when they least seem so, and the truth is that, notwithstanding his extreme sleekness, he was rendered uneasy in his mind, and exceedingly uncomfortable by a constant apprehension that beset him night and day. You know very well that in those times there flourished divers evil old women who, under the name of witches, spread great disorder through the land, and inflicted various dismal tortures upon Christian men, sticking pins and needles into them when they least expected it, and causing them to walk in the air with their feet upwards, to the great terror of their wives and families, who were naturally very much disconcerted, when the master of the house unexpectedly came home, knocking at the door with his heels and combing his hair on the scraper. These were their commonest pranks, but they every day played 100 others, of which none were less objectionable, and many were much more so, being improper besides. The result was that vengeance was denounced against all old women, with whom even the king himself had no sympathy, as he certainly ought to have had, for with his own most gracious hand he penned a most gracious consignment of them to everlasting wrath, and devised most gracious means for their confusion and slaughter, in virtue whereof scarcely a day passed, but one which at the least, was most graciously hanged, drowned, or roasted in some part of his dominions. Still the press teemed with strange and terrible news from the north or the south, or the east or the west, relative to witches and their unhappy victims in some corner of the country, and the public's hair stood on end to that degree that it lifted its hat off its head, and made its face pale with terror. You may believe that the little town of Windsor did not escape the general contagion. The inhabitants boiled a witch on the king's birthday, and sent a bottle of the broth to court, with a dutiful address expressive of their loyalty. The king, being rather frightened by the present, piously bestowed it upon the Archbishop of Canterbury, and returned an answer to the address, wherein he gave them golden rules for discovering witches, and laid great stress upon certain protecting charms, and especially horseshoes. Immediately the townspeople went to work nailing up horseshoes over every door, and so many anxious parents apprenticed their children to farriers, to keep them out of harm's way, that it became quite a genteel trade, and flourished exceedingly. In the midst of all this bustle John Podgers ate and slept as usual, but shook his head a great deal oftener than was his custom, and was observed to look at the oxen less, and at the old women more. He had a little shelf put up in his sitting room, whereon was displayed, in a row which grew longer every week, all the witchcraft literature of the time. He grew learned in charms and exorcisms, hinted at certain questionable females on broomsticks whom he had seen from his chamber window, riding in the air at night, and was in constant terror of being bewitched. At length, from perpetually dwelling upon this one idea, which, being alone in his head, had all its own way, the fear of witches became the single passion of his life. He, who up to that time had never known what it was to dream, began to have visions of witches whenever he fell asleep. Waking, they were incessantly present to his imagination likewise, and, sleeping or waking, he had not a moment's peace. He began to set witch traps in the highway, and was often seen lying in wait round the corner for hours together, to watch their effect. These engines were of simple construction, usually consisting of two straws disposed in the form of a cross, or a piece of a Bible cover with a pinch of salt upon it. But they were infallible, and if an old woman chanced to stumble over them, as not unfrequently happened, the chosen spot being a broken and stony place, John started from a doze, pounced out upon her, and hung round her neck till assistance arrived, when she was immediately carried away and drowned. By dint of constantly inveigling old ladies and disposing of them in his summary manner, he acquired the reputation of a great public character, and as he received no harm in these pursuits beyond a scratched face or so, he came, in the course of time, to be considered witch-proof. There was but one person who entertained the least doubt of John Podger's gifts, and that person was his own nephew, a wild, roving young fellow of 20 who had been brought up in his uncle's house and lived there still, that is to say, when he was at home, which was not as often as it might have been. As he was an apt scholar, it was he who read aloud every fresh piece of strange and terrible intelligence that John Podgers bought. And this he always did of an evening in the little porch in front of the house, round which the neighbors would flock in crowds to hear the direful news, for people like to be frightened, and when they can be frightened for nothing, and at another man's expense, they like it all the better. One fine midsummer evening, a group of persons were gathered in this place, listening intently to Will Marks, that was the nephew's name, as with his cap very much on one side, his arm coiled slyly round the waist of a pretty girl who sat beside him, and his face screwed into a comical expression intended to represent extreme gravity, he read with heaven knows how many embellishments of his own a dismal account of a gentleman down in Northamptonshire under the influence of witchcraft, and taken forcible possession of by the devil, who was playing his very self with him. John Podgers, in a high sugar loaf hat and short cloak, filled the opposite seat, and surveyed the auditory with a look of mingled pride and horror very edifying to see, while the hearers, with their heads thrust forward, and their mouths open, listened and trembled, and hoped there was a great deal more to come. Sometimes Will stopped for an instant, to look round upon his eager audience, and then, with a more comical expression of face than before, and a settling of himself comfortably, which included a squeeze of the young lady before mentioned, he launched into some new wonder surpassing all the others. The setting sun shed his last golden rays upon this little party, who, absorbed in their present occupation, took no heed of the approach of night, or the glory in which the day went down, when the sound of a horse, approaching at a good round trot, invading the silence of the hour, caused the reader to make a sudden stop, and the listeners to raise their heads in wonder. Nor was their wonder diminished, when a horseman dashed up to the porch, and abruptly checking his steed, inquired where one John Podgers dwelt. Here. ! Cried a dozen voices, while a dozen hands pointed out sturdy John, still basking in the terrors of the pamphlet. The rider, giving his bridle to one of those who surrounded him, dismounted, and approached John, hat in hand, but with great haste. "Whence come ye?" ! Said John. "From Kingston, master." ! "And wherefore?" ! On most pressing business. ! Of what nature? ! Witchcraft. ! Everybody looked aghast at the breathless messenger, and the breathless messenger looked equally aghast at everybody except Will Marks, who, finding himself unobserved, not only squeezed the young lady again, but kissed her twice. Surely he must have been bewitched himself, or he never could have done it and the young lady too, or she never would have let him. Witchcraft! ! Cried Will, drowning the sound of his last kiss, which was rather a loud one. The messenger turned towards him, and with a frown, repeated the word more solemnly than before, then told his errand, which was, in brief, that the people of Kingston had been greatly terrified for some nights past by hideous revels, held by witches beneath the gibbet within a mile of the town, and related and deposed to by chance wayfarers who had passed within earshot of the spot, that the sound of their voices, in their wild orgies had been plainly heard by many persons, that three old women labored under strong suspicion, and that precedents had been consulted and solemn counsel had, and it was found, that to identify the act some single person must watch upon the spot alone, that no single person had the courage to perform the task, and that he had been dispatched express to solicit John Podgers to undertake it that very night, as being a man of great renown, who bore a charmed life, and was proof against unholy spells. John received this communication with much composure, and said in a few words, that it would have afforded him inexpressible pleasure, to do the Kingston people so slight a service, if it were not for his unfortunate propensity to fall asleep, which no man regretted more than himself upon the present occasion, but which quite settled the question. Nevertheless, he said, there was a gentleman present, and here he looked very hard at a tall farrier, who, having been engaged all his life in the manufacture of horseshoes, must be quite invulnerable to the power of witches, and who, he had no doubt, from his own reputation for bravery and good nature, would readily accept the commission. The farrier politely thanked him for his good opinion, which it would always be his study to deserve, but added that, with regard to the present little matter, he couldn't think of it on any account, as his departing on such an errand would certainly occasion the instant death of his wife, to whom, as they all knew, he was tenderly attached. Now, so far from this circumstance being notorious, everybody had suspected the reverse, as the farrier was in the habit of beating his lady rather more than tender husbands usually do. All the married men present, however, applauded his resolution with great vehemence, and one and all declared that they would stop at home, and die if needful, which happily it was not, in defense of their lawful partners. This burst of enthusiasm over, they began to look, as by one consent, toward Will Marks, who, with his cap more on one side than ever, sat watching the proceedings with extraordinary unconcern. He had never been heard openly to express his disbelief in witches, but had often cut such jokes at their expense as left it to be inferred, publicly stating on several occasions that he considered a broomstick an inconvenient charger, and one especially unsuited to the dignity of the female character, and indulging in other free remarks of the same tendency, to the great amusement of his wild companions. As they looked at Will, they began to whisper and murmur among themselves, and at length one man cried, "Why don't you ask Will Marks?" As this was what everybody had been thinking of, they all took up the word, and cried in concert, "Ah, why don't you ask Will?" "He don't care," said the farrier. "Not he," added another voice in the crowd. "He don't believe in it, you know," sneered a little man with a yellow face, and a taunting nose and chin, which he thrust out from under the arm of a long man before him. "Besides," said a red-faced gentleman with a gruff voice, "he's a single man." "That's the point." Said the farrier, and all the married men murmured, "Ah." That was it, and they only wished they were single themselves. They would show him what spirit was, very soon. The messenger looked towards Will Marks beseechingly. "It will be a wet night, friend, and my gray nag is tired after yesterday's work," here there was a general titter. "But," resumed Will, looking about him with a smile, "if nobody else puts in a better claim to go, for the credit of the town I am your man, and I would be, if I had to go afoot. In 5 minutes I shall be in the saddle, unless I am depriving any worthy gentleman here of the honor of the adventure, which I wouldn't do for the world." But here arose a double difficulty, for not only did John Podgers combat the resolution with all the words he had, which were not many, but the young lady combated it too with all the tears she had, which were very many indeed. Will, however, being inflexible, parried his uncle's objections with a joke, and coaxed the young lady into a smile in three short whispers. As it was plain that he set his mind upon it, and would go, John Podgers offered him a few first-rate charms out of his own pocket, which he dutifully declined to accept, and the young lady gave him a kiss, which he also returned. "You see what a rare thing it is to be married," said Will, "and how careful and considerate all these husbands are. There's not a man among them but his heart is leaping to forestall me in this adventure, and yet a strong sense of duty keeps him back. The husbands in this one little town are a pattern to the world, and so must the wives be too, for that matter, or they could never boast half the influence they have. Waiting for no reply to this sarcasm, he snapped his fingers, and withdrew into the house, and thence into the stable, while some busied themselves in refreshing the messenger, and others in baiting his steed. In less than the specified time he returned by another way, with a good cloak hanging over his arm, a good sword girded by his side, and leading his good horse caparisoned for the journey. Now, said Will, leaping into the saddle at a bound, up and away. Upon your mettle, friend, and push on. Good night. He kissed his hand to the girl, nodded to his drowsy uncle, waved his cap to the rest, and off they flew pell-mell, as if all the witches in England were in their horses' legs. They were out of sight in a minute. The men who were left behind shook their heads doubtfully, stroked their chins, and shook their heads again. The farrier said that certainly Will Marks was a good horseman, nobody should ever say he denied that. But he was rash, very rash, and there was no telling what the end of it might be. What did he go for? That was what he wanted to know. He wished the young fellow no harm, but why did he go? Everybody echoed these words, and shook their heads again, having done which they wished John Podgers good night, and straggled home to bed. The Kingston people were in their first sleep, when Will Marks and his conductor rode through the town, and up to the door of a house, where sundry grave functionaries were assembled, anxiously expecting the arrival of the renowned Podgers. They were a little disappointed to find a gay young man in his place, but they put the best face upon the matter, and gave him full instructions, how he was to conceal himself behind the gibbet, and watch and listen to the witches, and how at a certain time he was to burst forth, and cut and slash among them vigorously, so that the suspected parties might be found bleeding in their beds next day, and thoroughly confounded. They gave him a great quantity of wholesome advice besides, and which was more to the purpose with Will a good supper. All these things being done, and midnight nearly come, they sallied forth to show him the spot where he was to keep his dreary vigil. The night was by this time dark and threatening. There was a rumbling of distant thunder, and a low sighing of wind among the trees, which was very dismal. The potentates of the town kept so uncommonly close to Will, that they trod upon his toes, or stumbled against his ankles, or nearly tripped up his heels at every step he took, and, besides these annoyances, their teeth chattered so with fear, that he seemed to be accompanied by a dirge of castanets. At last they made a halt at the opening of a lonely, desolate Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.